Welcome to Herd Mentality, a podcast from StoneX where we discuss global dairy markets and what's driving them. Remember that the trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. We're recording this Thursday, midday, January 30th, U.S. time. With me this week is Kyle Schrod. He's VP of our dairy group, heads up our U.S. dairy team. This week was the big IDFA Dairy Forum conference that was in San Antonio, and it was record attendance. It's a chance for the industry, both U.S. and global, to come together and talk about the big issues and what's happening in the markets. So we had quite a few discussions with processors, end users, traders. I sat through some of the presentations and committee meetings, but I wanted to start off, Kyle, by just asking you about the general takeaways you had from the conference.
Well, first, I guess I should say thanks, Nate, for dragging me onto this thing today after we get back. Hopefully I don't sound too tired this morning, but it was a great conference, as you said, really well attended, a lot of great conversations. You know, I think this year, markets have been pretty mixed, and I think there's been a lot of uncertainty. Obviously, we've had some turnover on the political side with the new administration coming in. That's created some volatility and uncertainty from a macro standpoint, even outside of dairy. All in all, you know, the majority of my conversations, I would say, were no one had a real high confidence factor. You know, there wasn't a lot of conviction, I wouldn't say, in terms of like, hey, we expect a big move directionally, upside, downside. My takeaway for the most part was I would say that things were probably slightly bearish, kind of across the board. You know, cheese was maybe the most mixed, in terms of the products that I had conversations on. Butter was probably the most bearish market that I had conversations on. And then non-fat was probably somewhere in between, which was just a little bit bearish coming out. But I think my biggest takeaway was nobody was really saying anything with too high of a confidence factor. And so you're kind of trying to decipher, you know, what, who's talking their position, you know, how much are people influenced by the prices or the price movements that we've seen heading into this conference. But all in all, I think kind of slightly bearish across the board. Folks, you know, are seeing higher cow numbers. I think are seeing a little bit better production, and to be frank, I think demand is okay, but not great. So it's kind of, I guess, how I would quickly summarize it.
I think so too. That was really my takeaway, that nobody was arguing for significantly higher prices short term, and they weren't really arguing for significantly lower prices either, but steady to lower for butter and powders. It's just on the powder side, it's a question of timing. That the sellers I talked to were still saying milk production in California is down. We don't have new dry whey capacity really coming online for a couple of months yet. Our inventories are okay, and they haven't been dropping their offer prices. So trying to talk up the lack of supply, but I think at the same time, the buyers are looking at U.S. dairy prices, U.S. powder prices relative to Europe or New Zealand and saying, well, this can't last. So there's weak demand balancing with weak supply here, at least short term.
Yeah, I was just going to say, as you're talking through that, like the thing that I guess pops into my mind too, is kind of the, you know, the short-term conversation versus the long-term conversation and the intersection, if you will, of California milk production bouncing back and these cheese plants getting going, right? So a lot of the cheese folks that maybe had a very mixed view and a very uncertain view in the short term, a lot of those conversations were still relatively bearish longer term as these new plants get going and get to ramping up. So I think that's probably a key point too, right? Is the timing of this. It's a lot of, I would say, bearishness probably on the front end of the curve for those class four products, but maybe not quite as convicted and even a little bit friendly as you get further out on the curve.
Yeah. I talked to one person in particular who was bearish short term on butter, but was still expecting a $3 price by Q4. So, you know, don't want to get too bearish or bullish on things longer term, I think most of the sentiment applies to short term, next 2 or 3 months in terms of market movements, maybe even 1 month on butter. You know, you look at butter and we have the new crop rule. On March 1st every year, only butter that's 3 months old can be traded. But during February, butter that's up to 8 or 15 months old can be traded. So we go from this 15 months of available supply to 3 months of available supply between late February and early March. And right now it kind of seems like there's a decent amount of older butter that's trading hands and could continue to pressure the market in February. But who knows, come March, things could improve.
Yeah, I think we've seen a little bit of a structural shift there. You know, it used to be that 90% of the butter was going, you know, direct from processors to the commercial end user. And I think as supplies got tight and the, you know, the processors weren't completely sure that they were going to have that product on hand, they started to let some of those, you know, smaller customers move off of their books. And so I think you've got more action, from the physical trader side that's been involved in the butter market. Now that's probably true for, you know, the last 12, 18, 24 months now. So far, I think what we've kind of seen is you've seen more activity on the spot marketplace. You've seen more volume trade there, but it hasn't led to, I wouldn't say anyways, massive amounts of volatility. It's kind of been relatively orderly. So this, you know, every time we come to one of these key points, like you noted with the butter rollover date, or as we get into the fall months, you know, October, November, you always worry about, you know, will markets kind of get a little bit crazy or make these sharp, massive, volatile moves. But it's been pretty orderly the last couple of years. And I guess we always kind of have to play the wait and see game. But recent history anyways would tell us that everything you're saying is true, but I think the market's kind of got itself sorted out a little bit as we've made a little bit of a transition and maybe seen a little bit more action from the physical trade side being involved on the butter buying and selling.
That is fair. Like the new crop, old crop, the price change has become less reliable in recent years. So maybe there is something that's fundamentally different in the way that we're handling that now. I did want to bring up corn pricing. The last time I had you on the podcast was talking about feed costs. Feed costs were coming down at the time. Now, over the past, 2 or 3 months, corn prices have generally been trending higher. I think the December 25 contract touched or got close to $5 a bushel last week or early this week.
Not new crop, Nate. It's been pretty interesting. Yeah, the old crop prices have rallied very, very sharply. I'm looking at a March chart, and basically if you go back to December 1st, you know, we went from a 430, 425 type price up to 490. But actually if you look at new crop, you know, I mean that has moved higher, but you know, that's moved in the scale of about 30 cents or 40 cents. So it's been driven a little bit more by the old crop pricing than it has by the new crop pricing. Obviously it's going to tag along, but that's something that I've definitely noted. There's a gap there between how far we've seen the old crop prices go and how far those new crop prices have moved.
And I'm trying to remember, I think the USDA corn inventory number was lower than expected for the crop that we just wrapped up, the old crop, right?
Yeah, we saw some significant downward revisions on the final yield numbers. So the January report was a significant surprise. You know, I think there was a few things, if you looked at, you know, particularly I think basis locally has kind of been a pretty good signal. And I guess I bring it up because, like you touched on, right, we were down at those very, very low price levels and we got into the threes on spot month corn for a little while there. But a lot of the conversations you were having on the physical side were like, yeah, but our basis is really, really strong, you know? So you'd have areas that were running 20, 30 cents higher year over year, or, you know, versus a 3-year average than what they normally were. So it's a little bit of a red flag. You're like, man, that just seems off. You know, if there's this much corn out there, you know, short term, I can see where basis would be a little bit stronger, but once you get past the first of the year and, you know, the farmers get a little bit more happy to sell, let's say, from a tax perspective, that basis should have corrected. And we haven't seen that, you know, at least not without the board price moving significantly. And so I am maybe not quite as bullish as some folks are out there on grains from this point moving forward. You know, I mean, we rallied from essentially a $3 handle, you know, high 380s, 390, all the way up to $5 on front month corn. And a lot of that has been because USDA has changed the fundamental outlook. And a lot of that has been because we've seen managed money come in a big way and flip their position. So if you look at the CFTC report, we went from short about 300,000 contracts to where we are now long almost 300,000 contracts in terms of the managed money. And if you look at kind of their absolute max on that managed money position, they typically don't go much over 350 or 400,000 long contracts. So in my estimation, we're probably reaching our peak, if you will, in terms of outside money wanting to come in and own corn. And the other thing that has happened is, you know, obviously the board price has rallied nearly a dollar for the on-farm guys, but that basis has gone from, you know, historically 20 or 30 cents higher than normal, kind of back to normal levels, and in some cases, even a little bit weaker. So, you know, I think the physical marketplace is trying to sort out maybe some moves that have been driven by outside money on corn in particular. So it's, you know, it's not one that you can fall asleep on, but, you know, my conversations this week with a few farmers, a few producers was to say, hey, listen, you know, I know this market has moved a long ways, but if you've got anything that's still open, I wouldn't be real anxious to go out there and get aggressive about pricing it right now, because I kind of think we went from the low end of the range to what, in my estimation, up here with the $5 handle is probably the higher end of the range. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a bit of a setback here.
So the futures, to try to sum that up, in the second half of 2024, the futures probably got too cheap relative to where the available supply actually was. Now it's rallied to somewhere between fair to a little bit overvalued relative to where physical supply actually is. Yeah. No, it was good to get the detail. So I think as long as corn stays between 4 and 5 with milk prices at 18, 19, 20 bucks, dairy farmers are going to be okay with that. But I think if you got $18 or $19 milk and $5.50 corn, I'd have to run the exact numbers, but I think the farmers would start to get a bit nervous there. So do you think we're going to be above or below $5 a bushel for 2025?
I'm going to maintain below. You know, look, I tend to, you know, kind of think that commodities markets, they tend to try to find break-even pricing, if you will. And I think break-even pricing is probably somewhere in the low to mid four. So let's call it 4.25 to 4.50. You know, I kind of, if you're talking to a grain farmer, you're like, look, you're probably going to deal with some negative margins here for 2024 and into 2025. But obviously we've seen those prices correct and move pretty sharply. And I guess it goes back to something we were talking about just a minute ago, which is, you know, the difference in how far cash old crop has moved versus how far we've seen that December of 2025 price move. It's been about 50% of the move that we saw old crop make. So the marketplace, I guess I would say, is still telling you, like, you know, that new crop price never got quite that cheap, right? It got down to around 425, which, like I said, would probably be kind of break even in my mind. And I think as long as you're around those levels, you know, you always have to avoid a weather issue with grains, but I certainly wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be excited to buy new crop corn at anything with a 5 handle. I think those, you know, mid fours are pretty fair numbers, because it's, you know, I think a lot of this stuff we've dealt with inflation the last few years. We've seen costs to produce goods across the board, whether that's grains or dairy, everything else, right, has increased. And I guess my personal opinion is that I think we need to see some of those cost increases that have come through for grains and for dairy. You know, we need to back off of those a little bit, right? So I'm not uber bullish, I guess, on the commodities prices needing to go higher in order to maintain a margin. I think in all likelihood, we need to see some of those input costs reset themselves a little bit and break even costs start to work their way down somewhat now that we're kind of I would say maybe post-inflation, if that's fair.
Yeah. So you're saying short farmland.
That's a tough one because that just comes down to cash availability, right? So it's pretty hard to get farm ground to move lower, at least in terms of pricing, because it's just too much cash out there.
All right, Kyle. Thanks for your time today.
You got it. Thanks, Nate.
The StoneX Dairy Team spans the U.S., EU, Asia, and Oceania, providing market intelligence, analysis, and forecasts through our interactive data platform called StoneX Plus, as well as full-service brokerage on the major dairy exchanges, the CME, EEX, and SGX. If you're interested in finding out more about our market intelligence or brokerage services, you can find more information on StoneX.com.
This communication is issued in the European Economic Area by StoneX Financial Europe SA, SFE by the SFE presenters noted. StoneX is the trade name used by StoneX Group INC and all its associated entities and subsidiaries. StoneX Group Inc. companies provide financial services worldwide through its subsidiaries, including physical commodities, securities, exchange-traded and over-the-counter, under derivatives, risk management, global payments and foreign exchange products in accordance with applicable law in the jurisdictions where services are provided. References to certain over-the-counter ROTCA products or swaps are made on behalf of StoneX Markets, LLC SXM, a member of the National Futures Association NFA and provisionally registered with the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission CFTC as a swap dealer. SXM products are designed only for individuals or firms who qualify under CFTC rules as an eligible contract participant ACPAD and who have been accepted as customers of SXM. Wealth management is offered through SA Stone Wealth Management Inc., member FINRA/SIPC, and SA Stone Investment Advisors Inc., and SEC Registered Investment Advisor, both wholly owned subsidiaries of StoneX Group Inc. StoneX Financial Limited SFL is registered in England and Wales. Company No. 5,616,586. SFL is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority registration number FRN 446717 to provide to professional and eligible customers, including arrangement, execution, and, where required, clearing derivative transactions in exchange traded futures and options. SFL is also authorized to engage in the arrangement and execution of transactions in certain OTC products, certain securities trading, precious metals trading, and payment services to eligible customers. SFL is authorized regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority under the Payment Services Regulations 2017 for the provision of payment services. SFL is a Category 1 ring dealing member of the London Metal Exchange. In addition, SFL also engages in other physically delivered commodities business and other general business activities which are unregulated and not required to be authorized by the Financial Conduct Authority. StoneX Financial Europe SA. SFE is a securities trading firm registered in the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg under Company No. RC Lux B 10821. SFE is authorized by the Luxembourg Ministry of Finance and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier Registration No. P00000012 to carry out, inter alia, the activities of investment advisor, portfolio manager, professional acting on own account, broker in financial instruments, and commission agent. StoneX Financial Pte Ltd Co. Reg. No. 20113059 8R SFP is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore and is a capital market service licensee for dealing in capital market products, an exempt financial advisor for advising on investment products and issuing or promulgating analyses/reports on investment products, and a major payment institution for cross-border money transfer service. StoneX Financial HK Limited C. No. BCQ152SHK is regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission for dealing in futures contracts. StoneX Group Inc. acts as agent for SFL in New York with respect to its payment services business. StoneX Financial Thai Limited, SFA Akin, 14177-4727 holds an Australian financial service license and is regulated by the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, AFSL, 345646. StoneX Securities Co. Limited, SSJ Co. Reg. No. 01040104799 is regulated by the Japanese Financial Services Agency as a Taipei Financial Instruments Business Operator. Kanto Local Finance Bureau FIBO No. 291 is a member of the Financial Futures Association of Japan for dealing and broking FX and FX option transactions, and is a member of the Japan Securities Dealers Association for dealing and broking stock indices and option transactions. The information herein is not a recommendation to trade nor investment research or an offer to buy or sell any financial product. It does not take into account your particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs, and does not create a binding obligation on any of the StoneX Group Inc. of companies to enter into any transaction with you. You are advised to perform an independent investigation of any transaction to determine whether any transaction is suitable for you. This material should be construed as the solicitation of an account, order, and/or services provided by the FCM division of StoneX Financial Inc., SFID NFAID 0476094, or StoneX Markets LLC SXM NFAID 0449652, and represents the opinions and viewpoints of the individual authors or presenters and does not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of SFI or SXM. It does not constitute an individualized recommendation or take into account the particular trading objectives, financial situations, or needs of individual customers. Additionally, Additionally, this material should not be construed as research material. The trading of derivatives such as futures, options, and over-the-counter OCC products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and you should fully understand the risks prior to trading. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. All references to and discussion of OTC products or swaps are made solely on behalf of SXM. All references to futures and options on futures trading are made solely on behalf of SFI. SXM products are intended to be traded only by individuals or firms who qualify under CFTC rules as an eligible contract participant ACPA and who have been accepted as customers of SXM. SFI and SXM are not responsible for any redistribution of this material by third parties or any trading decisions taken by persons not intended to view this material. Information contained herein was obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but is not guaranteed as to its accuracy. Contact designated personnel from SFI or SXM for specific trading advice to meet your trading preferences. SFP may distribute analysis/report produced by its respective foreign affiliates within the Stone X Group of companies pursuant to an arrangement under Regulation 32C of the Financial Advisors Regulations. Recipients should contact SFP at 656309-1000 for any matters arising from, or in connection with, this podcast. No part of this material may be copied or duplicated in any form by any means or redistributed without the prior written consent of Stone X Group, Inc. The podcast herein is not directed to, or intended for distribution to or use by, any person or entity who is a citizen or resident of or located in any locality, state, country, or other jurisdiction where such distribution, publication, availability, or use would be contrary to law or regulation. Copyright 2024 Stone X Group, Inc. All rights reserved.